If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
We are live with the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for this Wednesday, January 22nd, 2014, alongside Ian Ferguson looking chipper.
Hi, how you doing?
I am Pat Contry. We're your hosts for this evening. Ian, how you feeling?
I'm not feeling so good, Pat.
Yeah?
I'm feeling a little ill.
Not the good way, not ill.
I'm not ill as in awesome. I'm ill as in a little sick. What have you been up to?
What am I up to?
Yeah.
I was sick the past week. I'm still getting over. I got sick like last Wednesday. I went to Sioux Plantation and probably got a disease there from many of the brats probably eating there and touching all the handles. And
their boogery fingers.
Their boogery, snotty fingers, but great salad selection. And so I felt dead Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It was not getting better until like Monday morning. And yeah, I'm still fighting it. And so yeah, I got an Ask Frank out though. Ask Frank Volume 9 is out.
Very nice.
I'm going to start working on the website this week and getting it reskinned and getting it out there. Lots of good content on the site, though, so check it out. Are you checking it out, Ian? I know you're checking out thepunkeffect.com.
Once a month.
Once a month?
Yes.
You're missing out on some good articles once a month. Coming up on the show, we're going to be discussing Nintendo woes, Nintendo dooms.
Oh, my God. They're
we'll
done.
See.
They're finished.
They're
doom
done. Balloon. Big announcement coming January 30th from them. That we're talking about that. We'll talk about Warner Brothers pushing back Batman vs. Superman to 2016. We might talk about the Earthbound book being canceled.
You might talk about
we might,
that.
We might. and we're going to discuss the recent controversy sort of shedding a light on the ethics in YouTube and game journalism or lack thereof with Machinima and Microsoft and what's been going on with some of their content creators on YouTube. So we're talking about that. So yeah, it's been a weird week. We're tired, we're sick, but we're here for the fans. Yeehaw! Ha!
I'm here because I can't outrun you.
You can't outrun me? What, in the car?
Yeah.
So this was first reported from the Wall Street Journal about Nintendo had to slash its sales forecast dramatically, especially for the Wii U.
Right.
They thought they were going to sell a decent amount in the holiday season, and they didn't. They had to halve their Wii U software sales to 19 million units, so that was disappointing for them. And they said they expected to sell just 2.8 million Wii U consoles in the year to March. So that's not good. It was less than a third of initial estimates.
Right.
So what's going on here?
Well, I think before we get into it, well, I don't know. This is such a broad topic. Nintendo is about to have what my grandmother refers to as a come to Jesus moment.
Come to Jesus
moment. A come to Jesus moment. They need to drastically change some things with how they're putting the Wii U out there and handling the console side of their business. They're doing fine on the handheld. I mean,
yep.
3DS sold like crazy this year. They got out Animal Crossing. They got out Zelda. They got out. I know I'm missing something. Pokemon. Jesus. They had tons of stuff. But the console side isn't doing very well. And we've discussed this before on the podcast, and we've both been on slightly different sides. I was more concerned, and you were a little bit less concerned, thinking that if the games came, so would the sales. The problem is those games are a ways off, and they still need to do something with this system. Before I touch into some of the things that I think would be a good move for them, let's just address the freaking doom and gloom that's all over the internet.
Sure. Okay.
Nintendo has a lot of money in their pockets.
They have
$4.5 billion at least.
According to Wall Street Journal, Nintendo has $4.4 billion in the bank.
Okay. They can suffer a few more fuck ups like the Wii U before they're in danger.
Oh, they could. Sure.
And they don't need to go mobile.
And going back to 3DS, people, the 3DS profit's gonna off put, you know, so, or it's going to control the balance of some of the losses of the Wii U, for sure. The company cut their sales forecast for the handheld by 25%, but it still was 13.5 million 3DS units this fiscal year ending March.
So
that's a lot.
Yeah. So the first thing I want to address is the fact that a lot of people out there seem to think that Nintendo needs to go mobile. They don't. That's a horrible idea. That's an incredibly bad idea for Nintendo. The reason is, one, you start slapping out garbage ports of old games onto the iPhone, which is what I think a lot of people want them to do. They want to see older properties go to the iPhone. They're not going to play well. They have to transfer it over. People think it's just dumping these ROMs. It's just this free thing they have to do. They don't. They have to port it. A bad port tarnishes the memory of certain games in people's heads. When you play a Nintendo game, for the most part, the things that you realize are the controller, the game, and how everything from the controller to the game and in between is designed specifically. It feels like they design everything specifically for their games. Their controllers, I hate the N64 controller, but the N64 controller is such a weird-looking thing. Why? Because they designed it specifically to play their games. So you're going to tell me that Mario 3 on the iPhone is going to solve all their financial woes? They could make a lot of short-term cash, but it cheapens the idea of what Nintendo has.
I think people are also overestimating how much sales they would actually do.
Think about
the market of a phone and how it's, you know, it's small little kids that, I hate to say it, they don't know who Mario is, a lot of these kids. They're 3 and 4 just getting an iPhone, their parents get an iPhone. They may not know. And they got to deal with, Nintendo's not giving away their games for free.
No.
They're going to sell their games for, you know, if they're selling for $5 for a Nintendo game on the 3DS, they're not going to charge $1 only on the phone. It wouldn't make any sense. It would kill their sales on their other unit. So, I mean, they're in a lose-lose there. Because the quality is going to be crap of these port games. Remember, I did a video about playing 1942 and like Street Fighter when Capcom was coming out on the phone. I think it was like 2.5 years ago. They were terrible.
Well, and here's the thing:
unplayable.
People suggest that Nintendo needs to dump these things to mobile, right? And they think of those types of games. But think, when was the last time a company like Nintendo did that? I mean, Capcom has pretty much stopped doing that with like the Mega Man 2 and the Street Fighter that they did. You know, they saw that, they did that for a while, they put them on the iPhone, and a lot of these companies that were just dumping all of their games onto the iPhone en masse, they stopped doing it because they weren't seeing enough of a profit, and because the quality wasn't there.
Yeah.
Sorry, the Dayquil is making my head a little less than coherent, but you get what I'm saying. Like, they're basing what they think Nintendo should do now on this weird idea that kind of sort of died out, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And the companies that still do it, that still put those games out, that port it, those games get high resolution, you know, transfers, and they get better touch specific control schemes. The era of putting an old game on a iPhone and just slapping a touch D-pad on it, it's pretty much done.
And it hasn't worked.
Right. Didn't work.
So does it make sense then to even experiment with, I don't know, licensing?
No.
You don't think, even like, you know how Angry Birds has their Star Wars version? Would it make sense to have a Nintendo version of Angry Birds? Is that cheapening of their licenses?
I don't know about that. I just don't think, me personally, I mean, I wouldn't want to see it.
Just stay away from it entirely.
I think that would matter in the long run? No, I'm not so bold to say everyone have that same opinion. But I think Nintendo themselves, it's all or nothing, and they're going to choose nothing when it comes to that market. The phone market. And there's points that you just brought up that I didn't even think about that make perfect sense too. Their handheld's doing fine, so why would they compete directly with their handheld? They would have to drop prices on an iPhone app. If they're getting $5 for Super Mario 3 on the 3DS, and this is actually something we'll continue, they need to change that, but if right now they're getting $5 for something on the 3DS, they're not going to willingly give it to you for $1.
Okay. Obviously the 3DS is a smash success. No question about it.
Well, this goes back to... I'm sorry, continue.
So why not they build their business around that?
Yes.
And then from there, outwardly, go back to the Wii U as a peripheral to their 3DS.
This is something
which is originally what a lot of people thought was going to happen.
This is what you and I talked about this like a month ago, where I said, much in the way that Sony was able to make the Vita look more appealing to people by showing what it would be able to do with the the PlayStation 4. Nintendo needs to make the Wii U more appealing by showing what it can do with the 3DS, the thing that everyone already has and wants. And the first thing they need to do, because they haven't, is they need to unify the shops, the virtual consoles, and everything. There needs to be a high amount of cross-buy, cross-play content. I have a 3DS, right? If I knew that a lot of the stuff that I had downloaded on my 3DS, I could transfer to my Wii U and play, so I'd have a library of games already sitting there for me, I'd be even more inclined to get one. It's part of what got me to buy a Vita, was knowing that a lot of these games that I had downloaded onto my PlayStation 3, the PlayStation 1 games, some of the indie titles, I could immediately take my Vita home and drop them on that and go. So work it the other way. Put the download games that I have, put the virtual console and the download stuff that's on the 3DS, throw it on the Wii U.
I think a lot of people also assumed, and this is Nintendo's fault for not clarifying, or maybe they went in a different direction, they thought that the 3DS would be able to be used almost as its own controller on the Wii U.
Nintendo never said anything, but it just seems so obvious.
When they originally announced it, I think it was E3 2012. So before it came out, they were talking about how Smash was coming out on both systems. And I don't think then, I think at that point, they were going to be the same game. Like, at least when I was at the conference, and I was like, they're basically almost saying that it's going to be playable across the platforms on your 3DS versus someone on the Wii U playing each other on Smash Bros. And that would be amazing if they pulled that off. But either they couldn't figure it out or they moved in a different strategic direction. So now those two platforms are totally different.
I don't remember them ever saying that. But I remember that a lot of people, that being the first question when they announced the two versions. But yes, this is also the what I'm referring to, the communication between the two systems that needs to happen. If something like that were the case, you can take Smash, the exact same version of Smash, on the go, play it, get good at it, and apply that directly to the one on the Wii U, or play with people on the Wii U while you're sitting, in an airport waiting, for your flight. You can jump on the Wi-Fi and play.
Yeah. Now, I thought that was going to be the end game.
That's why I always say I think when it comes down to it right now, I think the 3DS version of Smash is going to do better in terms of sales. People are going to buy the Wii U version for tournaments, but the 3DS has a bigger install base. You're going to play with more people on the 3DS, so people are going
to
buy
even
that version.
Even if it's the inferior version, that's going to be a version that they're used to.
It looks nice. I don't think it'll be inferior. But yeah, it's just different, which is weird and kind of a bad choice on their part.
Yeah. So it's not going to be a scaled-down version graphically. It's going to be totally different in terms of... I mean, not totally different in terms of the moves, but it's not going to be the same game.
They said all the characters are going to play exactly the same, but the levels will be different and the graphic style will be different.
So they couldn't figure it out. They couldn't figure out how to marry the two, which is a shame. And like you said, talk about the eShops being totally different, having different products on both. From a marketing standpoint, I've always said whoever the marketing manager was should have been fired last year for the Wii U.
It's the U, it's the Wii. I mean, that's also come up in these articles, and it still comes up, and we've said it a million times, so I'm not going to spend more than a minute, but you named your product something that did not clearly convey to other people what you were selling.
Yes.
We've said it, like I said, 100 times, but there are still people who think the Wii U is an attachment. Or an add-on.
You could have called it the Super Wii, even. That would have been better than what they did.
They could have just given it a different name.
And giving it a different...
Or a numeral. I mean, I know I hate that. I hate the Xbox One and the fact that PlayStation's on 4 and all the creativity in naming consoles has died. But Wii 2 would have been a lot more clear than Wii U.
So they're kind of stuck to it. So some people are saying that they have this big announcement coming up on the 30th about the new sort of direction that they want to head into or structuring of the business. And people are kind of curious to see what Iwata's going to say. But he clarified before and saying they're not abandoning the console market, which they shouldn't.
No, it's not. They should.
They shouldn't jump off the building because they had a bad year. You know, they have so much. Again, they have so much freaking money in the bank from the past decade of the Wii strong sales.
Dude, their bad year is like falling and scraping your knee. Sony's bad year is like breaking an arm. Or losing a leg. I mean, it's very different. Not all of these. I feel like some people just look at it and they see, a news article, oh, Sony's in danger, what's going to happen, losing money, what's going to happen to the PS3, blah, blah. And they put all these companies on the same level, Nintendo, Microsoft, Sony. And preferences aside, you have to look at how much money they have. Nintendo can afford the loss.
Yes.
They can't afford to continue the loss.
No, they can't do this another 5 years in a row.
But this is not the end of it.
But they can even ride this out for the next. I don't know. Say they're internally they're planning for a new system. We'll just say 2016. We'll just say fall. We'll just say they're going to give it another 2.5 years for a new system. They can ride it out until then, until they announce something new. You know what I mean? That's not going to be a problem. And again, the 3DS is going to help buffer that loss, which we know.
So I feel like.
So what are they going to say?
Well, I feel like what's going to be announced is minor things, like I've mentioned, but minor things that are going to make a difference. The unification of the stores, more integration with the 3DS and the Wii U. Because Nintendo is conservative, I'm thinking conservative. There's a lot of weird theories out there. Some people saying that they're going to put out a new system, and they keep pointing to, like, you know, allocations of money. It's like,
no.
Guys, companies start making new systems the second their new system comes out. That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, they can't.
And if they did that, they would totally burn. They would burn so many bridges with people who bought the system.
You can't abandon your console that came out a year and a half ago.
No,
not even a year and 3 months ago. You can't do that, because then why would they trust you to continue with the new system coming out?
Right. That would be the worst. And I think the people who are saying that are people who. I don't know who
they want. They just want people to see Nintendo jump in with a super system that's going to compete with the PS4.
Right. They want it to be a homogenous system that is just like the one in the PS4. I frankly like Nintendo always being a little different. I don't know what they're going to do. I think it's going to be a couple of small policy changes.
They're going to unify their shops. They're going to try to integrate the 3DS with the Wii U more. Maybe there'll be a whole new marketing campaign that can't hurt.
It would be interesting if they, because from what I've heard from a lot of people, you don't need the touchscreen to play a lot of these games. Now, certain games you do. Mm-hmm. They make use of it. Some don't. It'd be interesting to see if they try to do a cheaper model without the tablet controller. Because Nintendo themselves has even said that the tablet controller is what keeps the cost of the Wii U so high.
So maybe a system that doesn't have it?
Possibly.
They sell it separately?
Now, because I don't know the Wii U intimately, but I know that it's not personally used. Like, for instance, most games can be played on the screen without the TV on, which implies to me that you don't actually need that bottom screen for anything. Otherwise, there's no way you can play the game mm-hmm. without having the TV on. Certain things like Zombie U and maybe new Super Mario 3D World, where you can pop out the blocks on the touchscreen and stuff, wouldn't work perfectly. But I'm trying to figure out, is there going to be a price drop somewhere in here that's going to help them compete, and how do they do it?
If they could figure out a way, it's going to be tough, if not impossible. They should have thought of it before. If they could figure out a way where they use the 3DS as that tablet controller instead, you know, then they could have sold one without the tablet controller. You could have used your 3DS, and that could have saved a ton of money. People would have jumped on board.
Big problem is, I don't know how big, 3DS doesn't have a second analog stick. Doesn't have a camera stick. Now, but they do have the Circle Pad Pro, so here we go. Here's an idea. Sell a version of the system that doesn't have the tablet controller in it, but has the $20 circle pad add-on in it.
Maybe that'll
slap
work.
It onto your 3DS. I don't know. You know, that's a possibility.
Then you know what? You sell a system for $200 then, instead of $300.
If they did that, I'd go out and buy one fucking next paycheck. You know, I mean, that'd be easy. It'd be easy for me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wish I had an answer, and I don't see a lot of...
A new system coming.
No.
Not anytime soon. It's going to be, like I said, I think the earliest would be fall 2016, and that's probably even too early. It might be 2017.
No, they got to give it the old college try. They got to give it a couple more years, and they've at least got to make the adopters who have already got the system, they have to give them a library that's decent enough so that at the end of it all, they can look back, even if it doesn't succeed, and say, well, they tried. They can't drop it now.
I'll say 5 full years would be the minimum. So, yeah, fall 2016, and at that point, they'll say, okay, we gave it a try. 5 years, it didn't do it. That's not...
they'll have learned a lot.
5 years isn't a great run, but it's not an abysmal run for a system. Abysmal run would be like the Dreamcast, it'd be like 2.5 years.
And then websites will get sentimental and run retrospectives about the 25 great Wii U games that no one played, and then it won't look so bad.
The port of GTA 5 that came 3 years too late. you know, stuff like that.
So I felt like I had way more to say on the topic, because it is a broad one, but...
It's a broad... I mean, I think...
I'm not...
People... So for some reason, there's some weird thing with people wanting to see Nintendo fail and being like, say, I told you so, and it's like...
Because they're stubborn, and people get upset at stubborn companies, and their stubbornness is largely what has gotten them into this mess, but their stubbornness is also what has given them the edge in innovating a lot of the things that they've done. So, like I said, one bad step could turn into two really good ones, depending on what they decide to do.
So, 8 more days. We'll see what Iwata has to say. Maybe it'll be something radical. Maybe it's something small. Maybe baby steps. Maybe it'll be something like we're reaching out towards third-party publishers and actually going to listen to them.
My brain decoded that as Iwata had a baby.
Maybe that's it. Maybe Iwata had a baby.
And his name is Nintendo.
He'll name it the Wii U 2. Okay.
All right.
Moving on from that. We love the Wii U. I'll still get a Wii U.
We love the Wii. We're the biggest Wii U fans who don't.
I thought when it was announced, I'm like, this can't fail. This is going to be as powerful as this gen. And no, they never got the third party publishers on board. And
let's talk about that real quick. Yeah. Here's another problem that is happening with Nintendo, though. In the news, it comes across as pompous when you hear shit companies like EA and whatever talk about how they don't want to support it, but Nintendo's never been particularly great with working with other developers.
No.
They're really good about working with themselves, and they love themselves, and they preen in the mirror and whatever.
Hello, Nintendo, you're looking good today.
But if Nintendo really needs to do some serious outreach with third parties.
Yes.
And I do have a feeling that on the 30th, we are going to see a couple major announcements from come out of that about them getting some licenses and possibly some exclusives from bigger name companies that I don't even necessarily give a shit about, but EA, Activision, Ubisoft. Well, Ubisoft is kind of already in their camp, mm-hmm. but Activision and EA.
I don't care if they got to fly out the CEOs of these companies and give them hookers and free blow. You know, like, do it. Get them on your side. Get the games on your system.
Yeah. So
Nintendo has the money, just do it.
So, I'm sorry, that was the point that was floating around in my head. I think that's going to be a big part.
Yeah, it's going to be a part of it.
I think third party outreach.
Remember the first conferences? They were on board. They're like, we're going to be doing. And then all of a sudden, next year, we're not doing these games for. And it's like, what?
They need to lasso them back in.
Yeah, again, they got to stop being. I don't know. They give them free Super Nintendo. Something to make them happy. Okay.
All right, onward.
This was something that was announced. This will be a short one. Our favorite movie, Superman Batman. We talked about this on the first podcast, about when Affleck was announced as Batman.
Don't fucking care.
So they pushed it back. Originally, it was going to be 2015.
So Zack Snyder
pushed it back 9 months later, 2016.
Figure out to be even more misogynist as women characters. Fucking piece
of
shit.
Well, here's the thing about Superman Batman.
It's awful.
It's obviously supposed to be a Justice League movie. They don't trust the Superman franchise strong enough to give Superman his own sequel, which is a shame because even if you didn't like it, you got to give your own franchise a chance. Ian's looking around as if he's disinterested, which is funny because he's doing a radio podcast, you know, so he shouldn't be looking around, and it is rude to me, but that's okay. So basically, They cast Gal Gadot, who's really skinny, as Wonder Woman.
Perfect fit. Just fucking excellent casting.
And they do Ben Affleck as Batman.
That's perfect.
And then it's rumored they're going to have Flash in the movie. And then it's rumored they're going to have, they're going to have a couple other JLA characters. Maybe Robin's going to be in it. Then all of a sudden, it's like, just call it JLA. Call it Justice League. But some people think they pushed it back because it was going to be up against Avengers 2 in 2015, which have been destroyed by. I just think they don't know what the hell they're doing.
No, they have no
They
idea.
Don't. They have no. Warner's has no clue what they're doing
idea.
With their movie.
They have zero fucking clue.
So they say the word is that this is great. The studio said their move allows the filmmakers time to realize fully their vision, given the complex visual nature of the story. As if they can't do the FX in time. That's total BS. They don't know where the story's going.
Well, Zack Snyder wants to make sure all the males are hulking He-Man and all the women are diminutive and, you know, submissive. We're not talking about this.
You don't want to talk about it?
Can we never, ever have another topic that involves this movie?
Batman
again?
Superman? You think they'll cancel it? You think it'll get out?
No. Unfortunately, I don't think I have any chance of seeing that movie canceled. It'll come out and it'll be miserable.
It'll be absolutely miserable.
It'll be unwatchable.
I'm going to drag you to see it with me.
I'm not going to go. It'll be the first movie I walk out of.
You never walked out of a movie, really?
No, I've never walked out of a movie.
Oh, you know,
I came very close.
My friends did.
I came very close with Man of Steel, but it was probably 20 minutes left, and I just was like, well, fuck it, I'll finish watching it.
We'll just finish it.
Okay.
You really look annoyed.
I am annoyed.
Okay. So Nintendo gone. Batman vs Superman. That's a bust. Here we go. Here's something that
Jeez, excuse me.
This was sort of leaked on Monday about Machinima, who is a giant YouTube network, one of the biggest. I think there are one or two.
Giant pustule.
Pustule. Okay, that's such a word.
Pustule, whatever.
So basically what Machinima does is they take YouTubers, vloggers, whatever, and they pay the money for the advertisements. They had a deal going on at the time where they were offering their YouTubers cash, extra CPM incentive, which is cash or more money per 1,000 views. Right. So they were offering cash in exchange for positive coverage of the Xbox One. Which obviously could have been a weird sort of ethics thing. So this is what was leaked. It was leaked on the NeoGAF, is that how you say it, their forums?
I think.
Who are starting to watch the show more, hopefully. So they said, hello influencers. This is the Machinima's email. Machinima is happy to offer you a $3 CPM bonus, meaning for every 1,000 views you get an extra $3 on top, whatever your crappy deal was already with Machinima, when you participate in our continued promotion for the Xbox One. It's easy, here's how. Incorporate at least 30 seconds of gameplay of footage of any Xbox One game. 2, verbally mention in the video that you are playing the Xbox One game. 3, tag your video with XB1M13. That's probably for Machinima or know that they're part of the promotion. Follow the guidelines listed in the assignment. 5, submit the live YouTube link through Pop10, which is probably their way that you submit. So, here's the problem.
There's two shady things about this.
There's
a lot of shady things, but the two are... One, that's something that's not really readily mentioned there, is you are not allowed to speak negatively about anything during it. Which, for an advertisement, seems about right. However, an advertisement is fairly transparent in exchange of cash for promotion. The thing that makes this borderline illegal, if not illegal, is the fact that the people who are involved in the promotion are never allowed to disclose that they were part of the promotion.
Yes.
Meaning they are not allowed to be transparent about it. Which means that you don't... If this is the case, and this sort of thing takes off, you literally do not know who you can trust, unless you think they're truly trustworthy, because you will never know. Ideally, you will never know that they have accepted money to tell you something that maybe they don't believe is true.
Yes. According to the Federal Trade Commission, you cannot disallow someone to say if they are being paid to sponsor something. Which, in this the agreement, if it's come out saying you can't say it, that this is part of a deal. Saying that, I'm just happening to play Call of Duty Ghosts on my Xbox One, and you can't disclose it. Like, when you watch a commercial... With Alex Trebek or someone for insurance, it always will say paid endorser, paid sponsor on there, meaning that it's disclosed that we are paying this company is paying this person money to promote this product, so that people at home don't think, wow, Alex Trebek just loves this randomly, so I'm gonna buy it. It's even though it's cheesy, it's a protection there for the consumer. Mm-hmm. This totally says fuck the consumer, even in a YouTube consumer world. It's the same playing field,
right.
and the rules are being thrown out the window. To Microsoft's credit, they're saying we had no involvement with this. This was not our thing. This was Machinima doing this through whatever advertisement agreement they have with advertisers. Because usually these big companies don't advertise themselves; they hire marketing teams, firms to sell ads via places like Machinima.
This is not an agreement between Machinima and Microsoft. This is an agreement between Machinima and Microsoft's advertising agency.
Yes. So it's bullshit, obviously. It's absolutely horseshit. Machinima is not a great company to begin with. I don't want to go into it. I've had minor dealings with them in the past.
Sure.
But the fact that they are having their quote-unquote producers, a lot of these are kids, teenagers, and these teenagers may not be aware of it, that's what they're doing, whether they're breaking the law or not. But it makes them look shady. Machinima looks even shadier.
That's what makes it look gross. They're preying upon... So YouTube is big now. Everyone wants to be a YouTube personality. They're preying on, and that was something that was brought up, they are preying on the younger members of this community who are trying to break in and make a little bit of side cash by getting them to do this, not really thinking too hard about the fact that it could greatly tarnish their credibility, mm-hmm, and their appearance, and they could be partaking in something that is potentially illegal.
So this brings up a larger issue about the ethics in game journalism where we're at. I don't think there are any. We're in such a sort of strange, still early phase, going back to, you know, the early internet where you had a few websites that did these reviews. And a lot of it is paid for play in terms of give us a good review or else you're not going to get preview review copies and things like that. And now a lot of that's going on. You always hear these rumors about like one website will give a game a glowing review that all other websites pan and people wondering why that one website give a good review.
They've got their ads plastered all over the back of it.
Exactly. So
there's also the thing that I do think when it comes to reviews that it's perhaps less crooked than some want to say. A lot of people seriously think it's all buying. I know people in the industry, and I don't think that it's really that way. I think for some of it, though, it is. You do have to dance, because game journalism is not journalism. It is just another PR mouthpiece. There's no investigation, you know? I mean, now, the people who go out there and interview legacy creators and people who have done stuff, and they put out retrospectives on games and get the inside information, that's all well and good. But, I'm sorry, your basic Kotaku scroll with, here's screenshots of X game, here's a preview of this game. All you're doing, even if you're giving your honest opinion of what you've seen, it's what they're feeding you. It's what the company's giving you. So it's just another spin on what they're already spitting out. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, with the reviews, the thing that always bothers me, though, that makes me feel like I don't necessarily think it's bought, but I think it's walking on eggshells. You get these games that come out, right? And with the way the rating system is now, an 8 is almost a kiss of death. But it's still, it looks like a good review, yeah. And the reviewer's done their job. Pat on the back from the old boys at, you know, the big, you know, publishing house to go on their way. But all these games that come out and they get like 8s and 8.5s, and then 4 months later, everyone sits there, including the people who wrote the reviews, and just slags the game off for how awful it was. And it's like, I mean, that's happened a lot of times. Like, people look back, like, when Grand Theft Auto 4 is a great example, came out, got glowing reviews, Grand Theft Auto 4. 6 months later, everyone was talking about what a letdown Grand Theft Auto 4 was. And it's because after a certain amount of time, they just, that need to kind of, I guess what I'm saying, the 8.0 is a wink and a nudge.
So you're saying there's built-in parts of the system to let people know that we're not totally slagging the game because we can't, because we have the agreements with these companies. So you know an 8.0 is like having herpes.
Sort of. And that's fucked up. And everyone knows that. When you look at game reviews, everyone knows that anything from a 6 below is crap. Mm-hmm. 7 is passable. 8 is good. 9 is better than good. And 10 is perfect. Like, the rest of the scale isn't used. But it works to their favor. They can give a game a good review, and it looks nice in the aggregate scoring. It really means, maybe not so good.
I always see articles from guys like Jeff Keighley at Game Trailers, and they do cool things. They try to do the Video Game Awards, things like that. But
isn't Jeff Keighley the guy isn't he the Doritos and Mountain Dew guy?
Probably, exactly.
That's a big scandal. That was a big scandal. He was the one where he was sitting there talking about something. He just had stacks of Mountain Dew and Doritos.
The whole point is that, I said in the past, guys like this, they are not journalists. They are barkers. They are carnival barkers, basically. They're just going to get whatever Papa Games put in front of them and saying, guys, check this out. I'm really excited. And if you follow their Twitter feeds, that's all it ever is. And it's never talking about controversies like this or talking about shortcomings, you know, or shady stuff that's happened with game companies. It's always like, wow, this game's coming out. Are you excited? I'm excited. And if that's what the leading game journalists are, then there is no game journalism. Like, where is it? Is it underground? Is it companies that don't exist yet? Does there have to be something created like Consumer Reports for video games? Is that where the answer is? Or something that's totally independent with no advertisements at all that's funded by the people that this is your source for, quote-unquote, objective game reviews? Because right now, that doesn't exist.
It's always existed in corners, insert credit.
But it's not seen, though.
Well, some of the sites were, but some come and go, because here's the problem. The ones that are being objective, the ones that are truly talking about it, right, without any filter, are the ones that don't get the paid advertisements. Without the paid advertisements, those sites can't exist or can't keep going. Insert credit was well known and well liked and would cover off the beaten path stuff and was honest about stuff, but you know, there wasn't a lot of money back in their heyday. Now the site still exists in some regards, but it's not what it was in terms of journalism. I never personally cared for it, but Ben Kachera of the Penny Arcade, the Penny Arcade Report, he was pretty cut and dry and cut through the bullshit, but Penny Arcade had to let him go. Well, fuck Penny Arcade. But because they had, there was no money for it. You know, the more you speak openly about this, the less advertising revenue you have, and the less you can support yourself off of real opinion pieces and actual journalism.
So then what's the answer? Like I said, do we need a publicly funded outlet?
That website Polygon was announced. You know, everyone thought that that's what Polygon was going to be, and very, very quickly they shat all that away. You know, running contests for, you know, games and shit like that, so which suddenly makes you look like, man, maybe you don't have everyone's best interests.
So at first it was going to be maybe that shining beacon of objective gaming journalism.
Yeah, I seem to remember that's how it was pitched, with a very, very preposterous and pretentious, like, video, like, you know, kind of giving everyone's background and lots of soft focus and shit like
lots
that.
There's lots of soft focus,
if I remember correctly. And it didn't work out.
So it's tough with the advertising revenue being so web-based, being so largely based on games, that you're saying it's kind of depressing then.
It is. I mean, here's the truth. Kotaku's pretty much crap. Destructoid, crap. Polygon, crap. But you can occasionally find a piece that you can tell on any of these websites. I'm not trying to say everyone who works for these places is crap. I'm just saying these websites generally are no good for me. But if you scan them well enough and you get used to reading certain people, you can find people on these websites that are going to jive more with your line of thought, and you can get a better indication of whether or not a game is truly going to be for you, if a development is actually a big deal or very small. But like I said, it's unfortunately can't go to one place. You have to seek out the people who kind of share your, what sort of freaking looking for, your ethics, I guess, you know, your viewpoints, and then take it from there.
Okay, so for now it's kind of like find your way through the rabbit hole to who you want.
Pecking for worms. Yeah.
All right, do a little Q&A, or do we talk? Let's talk about the Earthbound thing a little.
I don't know anything about it, so you talk about it.
Okay,
because I know you love Earthbound.
I love Earthbound.
This is for you, Rue.
I don't think it's an overrated cult game at all.
Big ups. Sounded like he was dead.
Rue's not dead. What do you get him?
What?
Rue's what was that? What are you, Sammy Sosa? What was that?
Okay, so Nintendo did something that made people upset.
Not necessarily. I think it's not that black and white.
All right.
I don't think it's like that at all.
Got a lot of dead space to fill.
This space for rent.
So, an employee who used to work, he used to help localize Nintendo games 20 years back, Super Nintendo, N64 era. And he had a Kickstarter campaign. His name was Marcus Lindblom. He was the original guy who worked on the translation. And he had a Kickstarter campaign for a book called Earthbound Confidential that was going to detail the process of the game being made and brought over here in the U.S. And he wrote Nintendo asking for their blessing, saying, you know, is this cool? And Nintendo said, we would prefer if you don't publish it. So it's canceled. So to his credit, Mr. Lindblom doesn't have any ill will towards Nintendo, because obviously they employed him, gave him his start in the business, and he did sign, when he worked for them, a non-disclosure agreement.
Okay, well, I mean, that's fair, then.
So I guess some people are going to be pissed, because obviously they want to see their Earthbound book, if they're being their Earthbound. But again, I think from Nintendo's perspective, it's not that simple, because if they let this guy come out with a book, they'd have a deluge of ex-employees coming out with how Super Mario World was created, how Killer Instinct was created.
Right.
I don't think you want your company doing that, because it not only sheds light on your intellectual property development, but also maybe other stuff behind the scenes that you don't want getting out. And it is the company's right to sort of keep that behind closed
doors. Yeah, it's not that cut and dry, because, you know, Nintendo looks at it and they think, well, even if they thought, hey, that's a neat idea, then they're like, well, we got to go through it. And, like, you know, there's going to be things in there that they don't want, probably things that they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think you're right. It would open the floodgates. I think what's going to upset the most people is this. It's Earthbound. people go apeshit for Earthbound. Earthbound fans also tend to feel like they've been persecuted. they have a persecution complex.
Because they kept Earthbound from being on the Wii. And,
So they feel like they're going to be kicked, and they've been kicked. And I do understand like that if you're a huge fan of Earthbound, yeah, it hasn't been easy. I think a lot of people are going to take this the wrong way and look at it as Nintendo once again shitting all over Earthbound fans, when I think in reality, it's just exactly what you said. It's them stemming the potential flood of copycat books about every other big name Nintendo game.
They don't want these people making money off their intellectual property over stuff that, again, they'd have to go through every single book and then white or blacklist everything
Sure there's no trade secret in there. Yeah. I mean, if next year someone does come out with that Super Mario World book, well, then people can be upset and the Earthbound fans can be really angry. But I think it's just a matter of protecting what goes on behind those closed doors. You know, it's like Disney, you know, they never want you to know what's happening. They don't want you to know how the magic occurs. Yeah. I don't think Nintendo wants you to know that.
So yeah, I don't fault Nintendo for it. People are going to be upset with them. Be upset with them, but I don't think it's a huge deal. Sorry, Rue. You're not going to learn how.
I mean, if you're a fan, that probably would have been a fascinating read, but I do understand why it would have been canceled.
All right, we're in agreement with that. Okay. Screw Earthbound and its fans.
We do have agreements.
Screw Rue and his $200 air fresheners he buys on eBay.
I love Rue.
No one loves Rue.
I do.
Rue, come out with a new video. It's only been about 12 months. Okay. Let's go to a little Q&A. No, as we're sick here. God, I'm old.
You're not even covering your mouth.
No, I'm like not.
A gross piece of crap.
Oh, God. It's Q&A time.
Can we have a Q&A sometime where people only ask us cute questions?
They're all cute questions, right?
Hot-blooded.
Q&A time.
I got a fever of 103.
I wish it was 103. My fever was
Come on, baby, can you do more than dance? Because I'm hot-blooded. Are you ready yet? We got some Q&A.
No, you
want
to finish the rest of the verses?
I could, but I won't.
I was going to say, my fever was so bad that I was literally like back in the 1880s where like just get a cool cloth and put it on my forehead and dissipate the fever, you know? Mm-hmm. And the fever broke like, why are we talking about this? Ice cubes in the pants? Yeah. I think it's a Three Stooges short now. Talking about ice cubes in the pants. That's a home remedy. Okay. Let's check the CU podcast hashtag on Twitter. People are bitching at me on Facebook about why are you not looking at the wall? Because I'm not going on Facebook. I want everything lined up nice and easy on Twitter. So that's what I'm doing. And then we're lucky last week we got a few different topics from this.
That was 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. We should do this every week.
No.
No? Okay. Fair enough. This is from at Adam Boland 2. Since you watch the Cartoon Network shows, it's not for me since I don't. What do you think about Uncle Grandpa and Steven universe?
You know, I love Adventure Time and regular show, but I don't actually watch Cartoon Network shows specifically, or even go out of my way to see them. I've never seen those two.
Okay, cool. Someone asking about Super Riff Brothers panel. The panel will not be online. We're gonna do basically a mini series of the episodes that we did at MagFest online, and that'll be happening in February. Also, is there a CU podcast this week? No, there's not a CU podcast. This is from at DK1105. How do you keep your game collection organized? I use RF Generations Tracker to keep me organized and from buying doubles. I almost had like a backdoor endorsement there from John there. I use an Excel spreadsheet. And you put it on Google Drive, and there's a nice Google Drive app. That's how I access it. You can either update it from there. You can sync it to your desktop. document so that when you make changes, it'll sync from one to the other. I don't usually do that because I sometimes see changes there. So what I'll do is I'll just delete the one on the drive and upload the one from my desktop back to the drive every month or so. And that's what I do. But there's also some apps out there people like. I think they're overpriced bullshit. I'm not paying a dollar or two per system just to check off the games I liked. Use an Excel spreadsheet because then you can put notes about the condition if you want or how much you paid.
I use a piles system.
Pile system?
Yeah, I just make piles. I really should keep track of my games better because I'll...
Well, you never buy any new retro games, so I mean, it's not like...
I just don't buy NES stuff.
It's kind of disdainful why you said that.
I bought two games at MAGFest. I buy retro shit all the time.
PC engine. At Sylvester 41596, Ian, how do you feel about the recent Steambox market clutter and the experience they potentially offer?
Jesus, I don't know anything about Steam boxes. Look, if they were ever affordable or something in my price range, I might consider it just to have access to the Steam library of small, you know, quick-to-play games. But I heard some of them were topping out at $1,500, and some of them, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty that were cheaper. I haven't thought about Steam boxes since we covered them on the podcast months ago.
At X-Files... 2000, 1999. Can you explain how reflashing carts work? I really don't want to, but once the carts no longer work, will this be a hard process for us to do?
So it's not a particularly difficult process.
Need the hardware.
From what I understand, you just need the hardware.
Hardware's not, was it hard, like $100? Something like that?
Yeah, I think you can get flashers that will work on 8-bit chips, like all the Nintendo chips, for relatively inexpensive, and as long as you're not converting a cartridge, you're simply reflashing it. All it is a matter of desoldering the chip, pulling it out, putting it into the flasher, flashing the ROM to it, pulling it back out, resocketing it, and that's it.
Just make sure you have the proper ROM to put on it.
Yeah, it's really, from what I understand, if you're simply just reflashing Contra with Contra, it's pretty easy.
It'll be easy.
Yeah.
So my NWC will be easy once it dies. Okay. This is from at Mean Spartan. One is more expensive than the other will be, but if money were no object, for retro gaming, Framemeister or wait for Retron 5? I have no idea what the Framemeister is.
I saw this question earlier. It's one of those questions where it's apples and oranges. The Framemeister is an up converter, and it looks really nice. So if you have all the original systems and all the original games and you have no interest in the Retron and you want to spend the money, the Framemeister looks like it does a really nice job. Like, I've seen screenshots of how it puts things onto like high def TVs, and it's gorgeous. But they're not at all the same thing. You know, the Retron 5 is an all-in-one console that has some filtering, but it's not a system, you know. The Framemeister does not play games, and I don't believe the Retron 5 is being sold as a cheap alternative to a real up converter, so they're different.
Okay. At Goots Ant, Pat, what made you dislike most of the now popular first person shooter games when you were at the forefront of the PC scene during the SNES era?
Pat was at the forefront.
I was right there.
Pat is always beating.
I was
edge.
Right there on my Gateway 2000 computer.
Cows.
Yeah, they're made in like whatever it was, Oklahoma or Wisconsin. The problem is now I see that there's no innovation in gameplay mechanics. I don't think the weapons are interesting. We got to the point now with these first-person shooters where it's almost like they're all, you can almost cut and paste the experience from one to the other. That's the problem.
I think the underlying issue for me with that is, unlike, say, Doom or even early first-person shooters, where there's a lot of exploration,
yes,
most first-person shooters these days tend to be very much
linear.
You're on one path.
And you hit your checkpoint every 20 seconds, and then off you go.
They make you take a lot of right-angled turns so you feel like you're doing something, but really, you're just going from A to B. There's not as much...
Yeah.
Running around, there's not as many branching pathways. And it's granted, someone will probably throw out an example that does that, but, and I haven't played much in the past 2 years, but most of the first person shooters that I gave like last chances to were just way too linear for me to find them fun.
And of course, most of them are the semi-future military shooters that couldn't be less interesting to me,
right?
In terms of military plots, and then, oh, this game you get a little probing helicopter spinny gyro thing that drops bombs, and shut up. I don't fucking care. Every game I have an M4 carbine in my hands.
This one has a dog.
Yeah, this one has a dog. And it's like, Wow, I still
And you can pay $2.99 to turn it into a wolf, but there's no gameplay difference.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Change the mask on it, you know? It's like
$3 for a fucking skin that turns.
Is that really?
From, yeah. You can turn the dog in Ghosts from a dog into a wolf with a $3 piece of DLC that does not actually change anything about the game other than the fact that the dog looks like a wolf.
Does it make your dog fly or be more powerful?
No, it doesn't.
That's fucking awful. Holy shit, is that the funniest thing ever. And these rubes are eating it up. Yeah, it's and plus now they're like the Manor franchise to a lot of these first-person shooters, which I don't like. Give me Unreal, damn it. Where's the next Unreal game? They're never going to come out with another Unreal game, unfortunately.
Sure they will. No one will play it, just like 3.
Well, people played it, but not that many. But people played 2004. I did. I was on in a clan and playing Assault and everything else. Will there be a live Ask Frank on the podcast? No. This is from at Raj029. Why do you hate Garfield so much? He's so lovable and hates Mondays.
He sucks.
Well, it's not the character. It's Jim Davis that we
yeah,
dislike because he's a fucking hack.
Yeah.
And he has no artistic integrity and hasn't written or drawn the comic strip in over 20 years at this point.
I imagine a Hormel packing plant probably has more appeal than wherever the Garfield comics are made.
The Hormel packing plant. That sounds really juicy. Juicy giblets. We answered that one. What did you think of the new CG Pac-Man series? I have not seen the new Pac-Man series. They're advertising at E3 last year. It's probably awful.
Yeah, it didn't look good. I liked the look of some of the toys, and I realized that he had a super long tongue. And look, guys, I'm not going to get all Namco fanboy on you right now. I don't have the energy, but that's not the Pac-Man I know and love.
At Nintendo Beer Guy, what is your process for cleaning cartridges when they don't work? Sulfuric acid is usually
urine.
Pretty good. Urine?
Urine.
Yeah. That's uric acid, I think. Yeah. You just use a Q-tip and a rubbing alcohol.
Q-tip and rubbing alcohol. Don't fall for the overpriced contact cleaners and stuff like that. You don't need them for a Nintendo cartridge.
This is for Ian. This is at Jenkins Josh, or Josh Jenkins. What device do you prefer to play Game Boy games on?
My favorite thing, my buddy made me a backlit Game Boy with all sorts of pro sound stuff for making chiptunes, but it's honestly my favorite way to play black and white Game Boy games. It lights up, it's got great battery life, and it's pink.
This is from at Mega5K, it's Megan. Are you looking forward to the upcoming Rambo game? Or do you guys think that'll end up being an abysmal novelty game? I have no idea there was an upcoming Rambo game.
Neither did I. But I'm just going to say that if it's movie-based, it'll probably be abysmal.
The movie came out like 7 years ago at this point, or 6 years ago, so I don't know how that's going to be. But I have no idea. This is from at Cygnus Destroyer. It's Matt.
Hello, Matt.
If you could own any pinball table and price was an issue, what would it be and why? Ian, go!
Fuck! Okay, so I'm going to narrow it down to two. One is Tron Limited Edition. Why? Because it's really pretty, really expensive, and I really like the table. It's not my favorite table, but if price was not the issue, meaning I could have any table for any amount of money, I would get that one just because it'd be the only way I could ever get that. In terms of actually playing, what am I really itching to have? Like a really nice, nearly perfect Centaur. That would only be probably about a $3,500 table.
I'll just go easy and go Medieval Madness, since that's my favorite game.
Is that the half question? Are you staring at?
At Lee Junfan 777, in your opinion, since the Wii U is dying, it's on the operating table, is a sealed basic set something that could get some value? No. I don't see that happening.
No, not yet. I don't think so. I don't think a sealed Wii is worth anything. I don't think a sealed GameCube would be worth a ton.
No, I don't think even a sealed GameCube's worth that much.
Yeah.
At this point. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, at some point, sure. A sealed anything to the right person in 10 years is going to be worth something.
This is from at Witch Knight. Will Ian please consider making us fans some punk Ian and Frank buttons with his new button-making dealie?
I didn't actually buy one, but I am looking to do that with my tax return. Will I make Pat and Frank and Ian buttons? That'd guess be fun. People want them.
There you go. This is from at mail_bag. I'm a huge collector of NES boxes. Is there any box art that brings back the warm fuzzies for you, too? The warm fuzzies. That's very specific.
Yeah, there's a few for me, and not because necessarily the box art is great, but just because I remember getting those gifts. I always get a little nostalgic when I see Mickey Mousecapade. That is good box art.
That's a good box art.
That's really good box art. But RC Pro-Am is totally, like, not exciting, but I always like seeing the box art and the label of that.
But I have your Solomon's Key I got up there. Do I not have... I have a Mickey Mouse page somewhere, I think.
It's really nice. One that I love, and the game isn't good, but it does make me feel kind of nostalgic and warm and fuzzy, is Kung Fu Heroes. It's real bright, bold box art.
I almost bought that one. I should... Yeah, that's a nice one.
I had a perfect one at the store for a while, and I
should have bought that one.
I should have taken it, but I didn't. So, yeah, I guess anything that I received as a gift, or I remember... Mappy Land, Donkey Kong Classics, Zelda.
He's like orange. There it is.
Yes. Yeah, that's really cute. And the box art is...
It's almost like a style you would see drawn now.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
simplified.
I love all the primary colors.
Like five lines is the head.
And nowadays, I really like, I mentioned it last podcast, I really love the Starship Hector box art, which was Star Soldier, but I don't, that's not nostalgia.
Bandai Shooting Range, that's a good one. this is from at NARC Podcast. Pat, mine is your two NWCs. Could you speculate the value of your collection with the range or figure? And Ian, most valuable vinyl. The value of my collection minus the NWC carts would probably still be... Probably I'd say 15 grand, I'd guess. With all the consoles? Something like that.
I have no idea what my record collection would be worth, but most valuable record right now... my first print of Com Trues is Galactic Meld, I think, is worth like 100 to 150. And I've got a number of records that were pressed in quantities of 500 that I've just bought at the record store, but they're getting big now. And in like 5-6 years, those are probably going to be worth something. I won't sell my records, though.
I won't sell 90% of the collection. Maybe 20 grand in the collection, man, I think about it. Because even stuff like the M82 is worth at least 1,000 by itself. The M8's worth 2 grand by itself. So right there, it's like... That's like 3 grand, right?
Yeah.
And two little things. So it could be 20 grand. I don't know. I don't care at this point. This is from at Video Game Heaven. Who are some of your favorite past wrestlers from NWA, WCW, WWF, ECW, etc., brother? Woo! All
right, so let's go with big men. Let's go with big men. Flair, Savage, and DDP are some of my favorites as far as big men go.
What do you mean big men?
I mean like main eventers, yeah. Heavyweights. But I love a lot of Japanese wrestlers from the Dragon Gate and Toriumon promotions. So like Sima, Yoshino. I loved... I really do like La Parca. Eddie Guerrero is probably at the top of like all-time favorites. Jericho is definitely one. I could go on for days about middleweights that I respect that I really like.
Benoit was my favorite wrestler. Then he killed his family, but he was my favorite wrestler before that.
Yeah, he was. I never gelled with him, but I never loved the character, but he always put on really good matches. And then he
hard worker.
And then he killed his family, and that kind of just ruined it all.
That kind of ruined my love for professional wrestling for probably 3.5 years.
That was not a good thing.
That was 2007. I stopped watching wrestling probably a little before that, but from 2007 to 2011, I stopped watching wrestling. It was so depressing because I was like,
well, that's nice.
I was such a Benoit mark that like I went to Madison Square Garden WrestleMania 20 when he won it, and it was like, the best thing ever. When him and Guerrero were standing at the end, like the two, it was like the first time with like, the two hardest workers were both champion.
I remember that.
And they just recently repeated that finally with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, where it was like, wow, the two guys that deserve it had the titles, and that's when it happened originally back in 2004. So it was Benoit. WCW era and early WWF, Chris Jericho was my absolute favorite. I tuned into the first hour of Nitro just to watch Jericho and how marvelous a character and wrestler he was.
You know who I always kind of liked, despite his ice train? Amazing, Raven.
Raven was good. Raven was very solid. He had a good feud with DDP. I love DDP from Jersey.
Yeah, DDP.
The hard fighting, awesome. The original People's Champ. Of course, WWF ruined him when he came.
Yeah,
and didn't know what to do with him. I like La Parca a little bit. I love the Cruiserweights.
Got some great matches in Mexico.
Rey Mysterio Jr. in WCW was fantastic when he still had knees and joints.
Yeah, Rey Mysterio is always one of the ones that I have to bring up, but there always has to be that asterisk next to Mysterio.
Yeah, because the past like 8 years, he's been terrible.
Yeah.
You know, in WWF, because he's like 40 and his legs are totally shot. He has two braces he wrestles with underneath his pants. Other than that, I love Savage back in the day. I love Ultimate Warrior back in the day.
Great Muda. I love Great Muda.
I've seen a little bit, not a lot of.
Love him.
And then the Stinger, we talked about. Sting! Who might be coming to WWF, finally. Helen's cursing work, so she can't watch CD podcast. Sorry, Helen. If this is from at Blaster Master, if you could take any cartoon from the 80s to make a remake for classic gaming, what would you pick? Mask, Silverhawks, Gem, etc. I always said that there not being a Mask game was a huge detriment to the NES library. How Mask was
a huge Mask detriment.
Mask was perfect. The perfect property. I mean, there was no Transformers game that came out in the US, which was also very strange. But I guess it was dead by the time the NES started getting popular. 87, it was already gone. No Mask game was kind of disappointing, but oh well.
I haven't made it clear. I never actually actively wish for any licensed game these days. But if I was like, if you asked me this question when I was 7, I would have said Voltron.
Voltron, yeah. Probably too late, though, again. How do you feel about Anita Sarkeesian's tropes versus women in video game series? I think they're literally, in quotes, a game changer. I've heard about these articles. I don't know much about them. I guess
they're videos.
Other videos?
I haven't seen them yet, so I can't comment. On a topic that sensitive, until I actually sit down and watch them, I can't comment.
I'm guessing it's a deconstruction of how women are used in video games. Yeah. Is that what it is? Okay. Yeah, sorry, I can't comment on it. Probably interesting. It's probably one of those things that, of course, goes over the top in some ways, and other ways it hits the mark.
Yeah, you know, that's from level-headed people I know who have watched it, that's basically what they've said. She hits a lot of good points, and occasionally she goes over the top.
It's like one of those moments where I say, oh, Legend of Zelda's misogynist, and this is why, and I've seen these articles, I'm like, just shut up.
And then they'll bring up something else that's really accurate and spot-on.
This is from at John Randall, asking about... Okay, this is about Comic-Con, about... I guess a decision's been made. I have not seen this myself. I love Comic-Con. I've gone every year since... 2008, so this will be my 6th year,
I guess. You were the one who told me this. Maybe it was Vine or Anthony.
But, so basically, they're doing away, supposedly, with the 4-day pass and trying to sell individual tickets. And, it's not shocking. If you look at what, Comic-Con, they've raised their prices for the tickets in general the past few years, every year. They can get away with it. People are always going to want to come to Comic-Con and do whatever they want.
Yeah, this is another way for them to raise prices while saying it's giving the people who want to go the freedom to pick the days that they want to go, which that's bullshit because the schedules are never put out that early. And the thing is, you know, if anyone was going to skip a day, it would probably be like a Thursday or a Sunday, but you're going to buy the other three days anyways. So it's just a way to milk more money out of it. I generally don't have to, my fiance usually gets me in, so I don't have to worry about it. But if I was buying a ticket and this is what I was faced with, I would probably choose to save a little bit of money and just get like a Thursday and a Saturday.
Okay.
I like Thursday because the tables are full, and I like Saturday because it's bustling.
Why are so many Genesis carts found loose with no box? They're made up of plastic till the end of the life cycle. Did one half pitch these like the cardboard boxes of other systems? Okay, I can't understand that part. But okay, so why are they not? I don't know why people ever got rid of Genesis cases. They're perfect for the games.
For a long time, we had more boxed games than we did loose, and now I have... Well, no, I'd say it's probably still about even. I don't know, maybe it's just your location, but... I would say it's probably 50-50, if not slightly in favor of it actually coming in.
That's
with the box.
That's still a very, very low amount for games cases that there's no reason to be thrown out.
Right, but I think people were just trying to unlearn old habits is all it was. So? Yeah.
Okay.
I don't drink water nearly.
This is from at So Dawson. What are your favorite TV comedy and drama series of the last 10 years?
TV comedy?
TV comedy and drama. So I love Nip Tuck. I was a huge Nip Tuck fanboy, if you can call it that, ever since the first, or I think the second season, which was like the phenomenal season where it kind of culturally went huge with the whole, what the hell was the slasher's name? I forget at the time. That the serial killer. He would like disfigure people's faces. And then I love Burn Notice. I love that show. That's gone now too. So what the hell's left? Jeez, all my favorite shows are gone. in terms of comedies, Curb Your Enthusiasm, absolutely brilliant. I'm not sure it's ever coming back, but it had a good run. It was on for like 7 or 8 seasons over 10 years. That's pretty much my sense of humor. It's twisted and a little bit dry, and yeah.
I'll just hit it with one of each. My favorite TV show probably ever, and my favorite TV comedy was Home Movies, which had 4 seasons.
That was a cartoon?
Yeah. Brendan Small, Lauren Bouchard. I think it's freaking genius. And it's also weird and a little dry. And it's all about the delivery and the fact that most of the talking was when they were filming the voiceovers, there was a lot of ad-libbing and a lot of letting them do it freely and talk over each other. So the conversations got funny and interesting. As far as dramas go, I was a huge fan, still am, of the first... I don't watch a lot of dramas, it's not my thing, but I'm a huge fan of the first 3 seasons of Mad Men. I thought that show was freaking fantastic. I didn't stop watching it because I didn't like it. I stopped watching it because I find it hard to make time for an hour-long TV show. And... I think I have season 4 on DVD, and I'll get to it eventually because it was really good. But that would be that.
That's like me and Breaking Bad. I watched the first two and a half seasons of Breaking Bad when it first came on originally, before it like blew up into this huge thing.
Right.
And after that, though, I sort of just stopped watching it, and then sort of thing that if I get back into a show, I got to watch every episode and rewatch it. So it's like I'll get back to Breaking Bad eventually.
Well, the thing about Mad Men is, you know, every season leaves off with the promise of more, but it also wraps up something else,
which is perfect,
nicely. So like, it's bad in a way because it doesn't make me immediately have to go seek out the next episodes. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm okay with how it ended at season 3. I don't know. I'll get there.
We'll get there. All right, moving on to the next question. This is from at B Waterwall. Are you going to be at SGC this year? I should be. I'm in talks with them to appear, and I probably will. Will Ian be coming along this time? I'm not sure about that aspect of it.
No. If anyone wants to figure out how I can go to more conventions for little money without making content, just let me know.
Well, you're making content. Well, we still want Ian's happy handhelds. The crowd demands Ian. You said you're going to do something with handhelds.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. All
right,
we're going to fucking shoot it. This is for a question. This is from at the Craig Fellow. What's your favorite piece of promotional merchandise that came packaged with the game? No idea.
The Pizza Hut coupon that came with Turtles 2.
The Top Secret Episode comic book.
No, I generally don't like a lot of the freebies that they throw in. It's just more clutter, like...
the Troll and Trolls and Treasure Island.
I
don't have that, actually.
Promotional or special edition? Because, like, the special edition for Shin Megami Tensei 4 was nice. Nice art books. I always like nice art books, but I don't know if that's necessarily promotional.
This is from at Classic Game Blog. Pat, how many boxed or complete in-box games for the NES do you have? This is not all of them, unfortunately. It's probably...
It's too fucking many.
It's probably 250 to 300.
Gross. Okay, continue.
Or probably 250. Closer. I'll air a little smaller. 200 to 250. Favorite... This is from WB Stillwell. Favorite Super Nintendo platformers not to feature Mario on the Super Nintendo. Platformers without Mario. Home Improvement. No. Wow, I gotta think about that one.
Spanky's Quest. That's more of a puzzle platformer, but I liked it.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of the platformers I played. I was usually more of a beat 'em up fighter person on Super Nintendo. Bebe's Kids. No, it's.
Yeah, no. I always say it. The Super Nintendo library is not my library. I don't.
For platformers, I had a lot of platformers.
Yeah, it sure did. And I love platformers, but I couldn't tell you.
You're trying to look at my disheveled list. You know, it's not working. My disheveled list of games.
I mean, I don't know. If I have to go with something basic, I really do like Mega Man X, but I really kind of like Mega Man X best, just Mega Man X. That's kind of my favorite.
Okay. At Notravania. Ian, do you like Mega Man?
That's weird. Yes, okay. I do. I don't. I'm not madly in love with it, but I certainly don't have the distaste for it that Pat does. My favorite Mega Man games were favorite Mega Man game was Mega Man Legends 1.
This is from at Dubious Gaming. Opinions on Nintendo's shortest lived console, the Virtual Boy.
Amusing. I liked playing Red Alarm. I only ever got to play it at display kiosks, so my time with it, honestly, probably totals like an hour and a half.
I remember my cousin got it, and it was a weird way how he got it. It was like, they had ordered something else from Nintendo, and they ended up sending a Virtual Boy instead of whatever they ordered or something. So they ended up getting the Virtual Boy, and it was an oddity. You had to play it. Look, it's 3D. 3D was what they were trying to push in the early 90s, and that was like 94 Virtual Boy. And but you couldn't play it for more than 10 minutes before your head hurt. So that was like, that's when you knew it was going to be a failure. It's like, I can't play it.
It's got some good games, too. Like, the Wario game on there is pretty good, and the Mario one is
sure,
fun.
Nessie's Funky Bowling's fine.
And I love Funky Bowling. But that's the bowling that starts at 1201.
I think the problem with that system was that they never did the two players like they sort of promised. Not that it would extend the life of the system. It would have been cool, at least, to have two players.
I think and lots of people have asked for it. And here's Nintendo being weird again. Put the Virtual Boy games on the 3DS. Perfect.
I don't think it's a problem. I think maybe they don't want to be associated with their hugest failure, maybe. Like
yeah,
that.
But the hardware wasn't great. The games were good. I mean, really, there's a lot of really decent games on that.
Could
system.
They colorize them and make them 3D? They could.
Well, I don't like the color red, so maybe if they could give you an option of blue or green.
Change the color.
Yeah.
Another flashing question, will we see more reproductions or reflash services for old games? Yeah, I mean, I think so in the future. From Juaro, asking about how we track our games, use a mobile app, we talked about that. This is from at Brandon Oak. Hey Ian, what other tabletop games besides Netrunner do you like to play?
Oh, I play Netrunner, I play Tanto Core, I like Couriers, which is like deck building but with dice. I have this game called Galaxy Trucker that I'm dying to play.
Galaxy Trucker?
Highly rated. I've never played it. That's a tabletop game that I want to play.
It's a board game?
It's a board game. You build ships, right? Okay. And then you build ships with little tiles like Tetris, and then you send them off, and basically random events happen, and you can actually fracture your ships into pieces, and when you get to your destination, you scrap your ship for intergalactic plumbing parts, and then you do it in three waves, each with slightly bigger classes of ships.
That sounds fun. I'll play that.
Yeah.
Well, let's record us playing that.
Yeah.
Galaxy Trucker.
But, no, the ones that I play the most, like tabletop, would probably be Netrunner, Tanto Core. I love Ascension, because these are all easy to teach people.
Justin's complaining that I'm skipping his question. Justin, someone else asked the same question about using a mobile app or tracking your games.
I track with Piles, and Pat tracks with an Excel spreadsheet.
Yes, via Google, the Google Drive app.
Specially made Piles.
Specially made Piles. This is from at Ahmed Jawadi. Hi, Pat and Ian. Are there any games that everyone loves but you just couldn't get into, and vice versa?
The Zelda series, for the most part, is always
for
my
me,
answer for
it's
that.
It's obviously been Mega Man. Not that I wouldn't be good at the games. We should have me play through Mega Man 1. Just play through it. I'd be able to do it.
That's called a let's play, and I won't be your friend.
You'll be my friend. Let's watch Pat play series.
Pat plays.
He's playing the games. Pat plays. Awful. There are the theme song.
Yeah, I like. I do. There are Zelda games that I like. It's just as a whole. I don't fall for it as hard as everyone else does.
And then we have the last question. I believe it's the last one. Let me just refresh right away. This is at C. Charles Reed. Why are Nintendo Age collectors so ethnocentric, spurning imports? I don't know about spurning imports. Well, here's the thing. Getting Nintendo games that didn't come out on the system from Europe is not cheap. Most are very, very expensive. Rodland, Mr. Gimmick, even stuff like Beauty and the Beast, the Smurfs game, they're not cheap to fit them. Elite's not even cheap. Elite's like a $50 or $60 game, which I want to get a copy of Elite.
I want Elite just because it's fun, but yeah.
So, I don't think it's being ethnocentric. It's 95% of the games that came out in Europe came out here, and those 5% are really hard to get.
It comes down to, if you're a collector, you have to put, and I'm not, but this is my guess. My guess is you have to put boundaries on your collection somewhere. Yes. Otherwise, it gets out of control, and there's no way to ever complete it, and you don't know how much progress you're making. So what do collectors in the U.S. do? They focus on U.S. games. What do collectors in Japan do? They focus on Famicom games. It makes sense. I don't think it's, as much as I could, there are some Nintendo Age personalities that are strange. I don't think it's ethnocentric.
Yeah, I don't think it's ethnocentric. It has nothing to do with that. I think people get a little caught up in You know, I think I feel bad for people that go on like these U.S.-based websites because all they're encountering are U.S. people. I mean, so we're not totally assholes all the time when it comes to this stuff.
It's yeah, just, I guess that's the thing. You know, a lot of these sites have popped up, and they're U.S.-based. So people who are in Europe who want to learn about collecting, all they see is the U.S. stuff. So here's the answer. It's not that they're ethnocentric. It's that you have no resource that is reliable to your area. So make one.
Yeah. So, what is it? Was it Prince Banana? You know, games like that, again, you can't find them.
Yeah.
And plus, if I want a game, even a game that could be only like a $15 game, like Asterix, I got to pay probably $40 to get it because the shipping's going to be $15-$20.
That's the problem I encounter when I import PC Engine games. Yeah. Like, you can get, sometimes even if you can get them at a cheap price,
you got to buy in bulk.
Yeah.
Like I did with those games like 6 months ago or whatever, I had to buy a bunch
of games. Whenever I order PC Engine stuff, I always order it. I always find the one guy on eBay who has the most stuff that I want, and I order at least 5 games, because otherwise it just kills you.
Sure. And that's the last of the Q&A questions. Anything else you want to cover? Anything else you want to go over?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to plug my buddy's game real quick, because he always plugs our marathon.
Okay.
My buddy...
Is this pay for play?
No, this is not.
It should be. I want some money.
I bought it. He didn't even give it to me for free. I refused the free code. I bought it. I've played it. It's called Gunhouse. If you have a PS Vita, go find it. It's on the PS Mobile section of it.
Gunhouse. What type of game is it?
Okay. It is... sort of tower defense, sort of puzzle. What it is the screen is horizontal. On the right, there is an orphanage.
Okay.
And there are...
orphanage defense.
3x6 tiles of different colors. And you make larger blocks out of these tiles as you swap them around. When you push blocks to the left, a gun appears on the house. Sometimes it's pig shaped, sometimes it's a beach ball gun, whatever. If you push them to the right, it fills up bombs. So there's 3 gun slots and 3 bomb slots. And then after a certain amount of time, like 15 seconds, waves of enemies like pirate penguins and fancy ghosts come at you, and they try to steal your orphans, so you have to kill them. And it's gorgeous. The music is done by the guy who did the music in Fez. The art is all hand-drawn and beautiful, and it's like $3.50.
Can we do voices for the game? Can we be characters? Can we be special characters?
It's already out.
Can we update it so we can be special characters?
No, we're not special characters.
I'll be special character, you.
So look it up. It's fun. It's pretty. It's colorful.
Gunhouse on the PlayStation devices.
Vita.
So then no one's going to buy it.
Mine, I'm still all right.
No one has the Vita.
Well, it's on anything that supports PlayStation Mobile, so actually I think like HTC devices.
Tell them to get it on the 3DS. We'll play it.
Nintendo doesn't like working with anyone. We talked about this earlier.
Yeah, that's right. They don't. That's the other thing they were saying. They should open up the 3DS to anyone. Yes. Anyone's game. We didn't really talk about that, but they should.
But whatever. Podcast is over.
I
feel like garbage.
Ian feels like garbage.
Dayquil is wearing off.
You didn't have his Mexican beer this time. He has a smart water.
Yeah, I drank.
You left a water ring. Whatever, on my Nintendo cart.
Don't care. I muttered it under my breath, but I drank the water about half as fast as I drank the beer.
Smart water. All right, guys, this is the CU Podcast. It was the CU Podcast for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2014. Ian's going to say goodbye now.
Big sloppy kisses.
And with that, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye, everyone.